Hello there.
Hello.
My name's Kate Rowles.
Hello.
And hello. I'm interviewing you on behalf of the Wellcome Trust.
Good.
For your taking part in the new artwork by Anthony Gormley, One Another. And today's the 9th of July 2009. And if I can please ask you to state your full name, your age and where you come from.
My name's Anthony Presley. That's Anthony, not Anthony. Anthony Presley, I'm 48 and from Worksop in Nottinghamshire.
Brilliant. And how did you first hear about this project?
People keep asking me, and I'm not quite sure. I think I saw it on the BBC website, news website. I think that's when I saw it, late at night one night.
Yeah. And what made you want to apply?
It just seemed odd, and I like the odd. Odd catches me eye a lot, and I thought, you know, I might have a go at that. So I just put my name down. They do.
And what happened when you found out that you got a place?
My heart sank, because then I realised it was real and not just a little box I ticked on the internet. You know, you're always ticking boxes on the internet. And I thought, oh, what shall I do? So I thought, I'll do it. Simple as that, you know. Not as simple as that, but yeah.
And what did you decide to do?
Well, at first of all, I thought I'd do nothing. I'd just maybe back and have a sit and a chat and wait for the crowds if there were any. But then I thought, now I'll do a little bit more. So what I've done is I've got a cardboard cutout. It's not a cutout, it doesn't look that fancy, but it's a life-size photo of my dad, who died when I was 4 years old. So I don't know him, I don't know my dad. So I've got a life-size cutout, and I'm sort of like, I'm putting him on a pedestal in the middle of Trafalgar Square, because I think it's full of monuments. I don't know Trafalgar Square, but it's full of famous people. I say famous, I've never heard of some of them. But they're supposed to be the great and the good. And my dad's not the great and the good. The dad's an ordinary man like me, like most people's dads. He just went to the pub. He worked in allotment, went down the mines. You know, he's just an ordinary fellow. And I thought, so a semi-monument to the ordinary man. Just for 1 hour, an ordinary bloke. And it's a way of remembering my dad as well. So, you know, it's a little thing. I had to find a lot about him because I didn't know much about him, you know.
And
that should work out.
Yeah. And how are you feeling about going up there today?
I've been all right with it, yeah, actually. When I first saw the website go up, I thought, oh, that doesn't look very good, really. It looks a bit, you know, not. It looks narrower than I thought it was going to be. It's not great with heights. I was preparing myself for that. What I didn't see was the narrowness. It's only like 3 people wide. So there's no walking around. I've got to stand still looking pale and drawn and terrified. And I'm feeling a little bit nervous. But I've seen that it's quite quiet at the minute, so I'm not going to get heckled, but I'm not going to get a round of applause either. So, yeah.
And what does it mean to you to stand on the plinth?
I wouldn't say it means anything, not in the big frame of things. But it's something almost unique. But there's no such thing as almost unique, it's unique or not unique. But it's something I'm never going to get a chance to do again. Because anybody who stands in the street on a plinth and shouts at people is basically a loony. But I can do it now without being a loony. I can just be the bloke standing on the plinth for a so-called art project. Sorry, I said so-called, didn't I? Sorry about that. Yeah.
Brilliant. And who are you doing this for?
Well, for me. I've come from a big family. I've got 7 brothers and sisters. My eldest sister's with me today. She's not very well. And she's even put her name down on the list, apparently. She only told me yesterday. I've got a lot of aunties and uncles, and there's my mum. And I thought, well, it'd be some way of remembering my dad to the rest of the family. Now, I don't know if it'll mean anything to other people as much as it means to me, but that's what it is. It's like, it's a life-size cutout of my dad on a plinth in Trafalgar Square, sort of like a statue, and I don't want to say I'm being emotional about it, really, but I think it'd just be nice. It's something that nobody else can say they've done. Unless, of course, somebody sneaks in a few weeks later and copies me. And I'll not be pleased. I know where they live.
Yeah. And did you make the cutouts?
Yeah. It sounds more elaborate than what it is. It's a load of A4 sheets. I've got some software on the internet which allows you to blow photos to massive sizes. You know, you could take a portrait, a passport photo, and make it as big as a house. Why you'd want to, but... So I just got an old photo, I scanned it, because we haven't got many photos of Deborah, we've got about 6 or 7 photos. So I got this old photo, scanned it, printed out a load of A4 sheets, stuck it together with sellotape, pinned it to some solid cardboard, and that's it. But it sounds elaborate, it might look rubbish. It looked alright to me.
And how old is your dad in the picture?
In the picture, he's about 22, I think. But it's the picture itself's got a peculiar story, if I could tell you about it. It was originally a tiny snapshot taken in the, must have been the 40s at the seaside, Skegness, Cleethorpe, something like that. And but when my dad died, we didn't have many photos. So my mum took this little snapshot, had it blown up, and then hand-painted over, like they used to do in the 40s and 50s. So it looks like this semi-technicolour picture. So then I've scanned that and I've blown it up to life size proportions, so it's lost some definition, but it's gained something in height. You know, so it started off as a fun size photo, now it's life size, and it's quite interesting. The process was intriguing, just trying to do it. I'd love to get the original photo and strip the paint off just to see what the original picture was underneath it. But this is probably intriguing Anthony Gormley, but if I was to strip the paint off, I'd ruin the original. It's a bit like the famous one about the artist with the excrement in the tin. You open the tin, you ruin the work. You don't know if it's excrement or not. Or as it says, I'm not saying the word, but it's like that. If the photo, don't know what's underneath the photo. And that'd be intriguing. When mum's gone, I'm out. I've got a scan of the photo. I'll strip it down and pretend I've spilled some tea on it and I've got to clean it up or something.
Can you say a bit more about your dad if this is a monument to him.
It's more of a slight memorial. What it was is, it was an ordinary man. He had a slight edge to him. His story got a slight edge. I mean, he was 14. He learnt to drive at 14 in the 1930s. Now, not many people drove in the 30s anyway. So he learnt to drive at 14. He used to deliver coal for the mines because he worked at the mine, or the pit as we call it, when he was. I think he started work at 14 at the pit. He didn't go down the pit till he was 17, but he worked on what's called the pit top, delivering coal, that sort of thing. Then he went down the mines for 17 years. But in that time, he was very athletic. He was a boxer, he was a runner, he was a footballer, he was a gymnast. So he did rather interesting, I mean, very sedentary nowadays. I mean, nobody in our family walks more than 20 feet without getting in a car. That's what people do nowadays. But my dad was incredibly fit, as far as I was told. And then when he got married at about 22, 23, I think it was. In fact, I don't know how old. And then they fell by the by. But because he was such a fit man and he had to get it out, he actually became a professional wrestler. You know, professional wrestler. I know it's... Well, if I was 11, that would actually blow my head away. But I'm not, and it still does. Even now, you can hear it in the voice. It's just something that's just incredible for somebody to suddenly find out the dad used to be a professional wrestler. It's not in like, they were in the old days. I mean, you're too young to remember this, but we used to have this thing called World of Sport, and they'd be wrestling in the afternoon. You get Les Kelly and Mick McManus, and there'd be these fat middle-aged men fighting in a ring. And it's that sort of wrestling they used to do. And he used to say to my mum would say, what time tonight? I said, well, it's my turn to lose. I'll be in about 8 o'clock. Because they knew beforehand, but they wouldn't just put a show on, pretend you're a wrestler. But I just think the idea of that, finding out your dad or your granddad's a wrestler, is fantastic. But that's just one of the things. And he left the pit because he had problems with his lungs. But from what I can find out, that was probably a lot to do with the waste, because they were heavy smoked in those days as well. So he left the pit about 1958-59, got a job working in a lumber yard, delivered logs, they used to make sleepers for railways, that sort of thing. And then in one day in 1964 it was, New Year's Eve 1964, he decided he wasn't going to go out that night. Because everybody used to in them days, the wife stayed at home, the husband would go out to the pub, come back midnight, whatever. He decided he wasn't going out, so he decided to stay in, and everybody had he sent me eldest brother out to the off license, come back with some beers. They'd had a few beers, watched the television, and saw the new year in. Following day, he says to my mum, "Will you stay in bed? You stay in bed. I'll have a day off." He looked after the kids, and he went off to work because people worked on New Year's Day. It's only recently come a bank holiday. And he got in the van and went away. Sorry, I'm choking because I'm choking, not because I'm crying. Excuse me. But this is the day he had his fatal accident, you see. He went away that morning, waved goodbye, got in the front of the van because he went to work in the van. On his way to work, he died. But the funny thing is when he died, he was in the front of the van. My dad never travelled in the front of the van. He only ever travelled in the back because he didn't like being in the front. It made him feel a bit weird. But what had happened was, is the night before, the younger guy had been out drinking like they do, decided he didn't want to be in the front, so they swapped. And if in that swap, that quarter mile down the road, in that swap, decided my dad's fate. Because they hit a patch of black ice, skidded into the back of a lorry, and 4 days later he died. So it was top of a coin, whether he lived or died. See, that's obviously that's, I know it sounds as if I'm being trying to be all fatal and all mystical, but it's not, it's just, that's what life does to you. I could get up on that plane for now, and I could fall off it. If I decide I'm going to be really clever, and I'm going to walk up to the thing and fall because I'm really showing off to the camera, and life could just, you know, change on a whim. I mean, Trafalgar Square's a busy place, I could get off. Oh, that was good. You know, walk into the traffic. You know, you don't know what is happening tomorrow. And that's partly one of the reasons I want to do this, because I'm not going to get, ever going to get a chance to do this again. What's it they say? Do everything, do something every day that scares you. Now, there's no lions I'm going to wrestle. Well, this is something doing. Also another phrase. Do everything once except incest and folk dancing. I've done folk dancing. I'm not doing the other thing. So I said a gamble, didn't I?
And what's your dad's name?
Albert. Albert Ernest Presley. Yeah. But everybody knew him as Mick. And that's another peculiar. Him and his brothers and his dad were all called Mick, even though none of them ever were called Michael. It was always Mick Presley. It was the family name. So when my eldest brother was born, they called him Michael, so he could actually be called Mick. So we called him Mike. He was in Ireland at the minute. He lives in Ireland. Yeah.
And how would you describe yourself? You've told me a lot about your dad. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
I don't know. You have to talk about yourself. I'm single. But that's just a fact, not about me. I find things fascinating that other people don't. I can endlessly think something through which has got no relevance to real life. You know, I suppose it's a bit anal. It's a bit like, you know, if you're trying to, I don't know, you buy a new phone, you got to get it settled just how you want your new phone. But I'm like that with a lot of things. I won't say I'm anal, but I just like stuff to be just, I like to find out about things. That's part of the thing. I've put a lot of effort into what is basically only about six people are ever going to see. I could have, like I said, I could have just gone up and sat up there with a paperback and read for half an hour. But instead, I've put a lot of effort. I've spoke people, I've sourced photos, I've prepped it, I've done this, I've done that, just to get it just right for possibly nothing. And that's the way I do things. I will drag something down to the finest detail. I suppose that's what's attracted me to this. It's like Anthony Gormley does with his artwork, whether you like it or not, is that he puts so much effort into his stuff. I mean, it's not just like I'm making a statue and here's a statue, isn't it nice? It's like, here's a statue, look what I've done with it. I've put it in a place that makes you feel a bit weird. I've put it, you know, like that. I can never remember his names of his stuff, but the one where he did with the statues in the surf. He did a load of statues, stone bronze statues of life size in the surf. And just that setting, maybe the photos, the way some of the photos have been taken, but the setting of those those statues, to me, is better than the statues. And it's the same with the Angel of the North. It's like this, I was one of the few people to defend it when it came out. Everybody's going, what a waste of money, and I'm saying, but look at it. Everybody's talking about it. Hate it, love it, whatever you want to do with it, it's there, you're going to notice it. And you drive up to Gateshead, you see it. And if you don't at least take eyes off the road and look at it, then you've missed something in your brain as far as I'm concerned. You might not get out of the car and go and look for it like I did. I mean, like I say, I pull over, look for it. and go over and touch it, but you've got to see it. And that's what I like about Anthony Gormley's work. You notice it. That the ones I'd love to have seen, I never saw him in real life, but the statues on top of the buildings, on the corners overlooking. I wonder how many people stood at the bottom shouting, jump! Because somebody will have done, you know. So that's the sort of person I am. I like the unusual, the odd, the stuff that catches my eye. I'm not saying I'm into modern art, because I think most of it's nonsense, to be truthful. I'd like to go to the Tate Modern just so I could say it's nonsense. But there'll be something there that I could say, I like that, or I don't like that because this is why I don't like it. I don't just say, I don't like it out of hand. I don't like it because of certain ways about it, the pointlessness of it. Maybe that's part of modern art. Maybe the pointlessness is part of the art. I don't know, because it's a bit pretentious sometimes. Sorry, Mr. Gormley. Yeah. But, you know, there's nothing to say. I could stand up on that plane with the board saying, aren't I a waste of time? This is wasting your taxes and mine. But I'm not going to.
What do you think about this project?
As a project, it's interesting to me, but whether that's a waste of time, because I'm interested in fiddly things. I like the idea they put so much effort into something that only a few really people are going to appreciate. And a grand folly is sometimes worth doing, isn't it? It's like a spectacular gesture. It's like trying to get that girl you can never get because she's already married and got three kids, and there's absolutely no way you're going to ever get anywhere near her, but you still want to pursue it because you know there's always that little tiny little thing that just makes it worth thing. And I think this is like a grand folly. I think a lot of people are spending a lot of time and a lot of money and a lot of effort into something that is a very minority. You don't get much more minority interest than this. You get a few dozen people in Trafalgar Square who will wave to you, and might they mention it to their friends, but nobody's got a great love for it, I don't think they have. My family have said, oh yeah, go for it, but half the people at work have said, what? Are you mad? I'm thinking, well, yeah, you know, some people have said, oh, go for it. Some people have said, are you a loony or what? Maybe I am. But see, that's what I mean. It is polarising, isn't it? You've got a theory about it, whether you like it or not. If you think it's the biggest line of pants ever, at least it's got your attention. But whether you'll like it or not like it, I don't know. There's one thing about Anthony Gormley, at least he makes statues. You can look at the statues. These people make like a flickering light and nobody can ever see other than the people in the room with the flickering light. Is it art if nobody sees it? Does the Pope shit in the woods?
Is there anything else that you'd like to say about being here today?
Not really. Next time, don't make it 24 hours a day. Make it nice. Saturday to Sunday, Monday, you know, 12 o'clock while 3 is nice. That's about right. Then I can get some sightseeing in without losing sleep.
Can I just ask you about your T-shirt?
Oh yeah, yeah. I work at a hospital in Nottinghamshire. It's called Bassalore Hospital, and it's not a big hospital. It's merged with the Doncaster Royal Infirmary, so altogether it makes it a big hospital. But this T-shirt, it says on it, if I can read it myself, it says Bassalore Breast Care Appeal, and they're trying to raise funds to improve their mammography department. Mm. It's only been there, the Princess Diana Memorial Mammography. We've got royal permission to use the name. And it's only been there a few years, but now it's out of date already. It's very small. The hospital itself is not a big hospital, it's got a large catchment area, and we're just trying to raise more money to expand it. The hospital itself is getting bigger. We've just opened a new renal unit. There's just an MRI scanner this week has just opened. The renal opened last week. So it's getting bigger, but everything costs money. It should be paid for by the government, if you're listening, Mr. Brown nowadays, isn't it? But it's not, it's always by public funding. And so I'm going to wear a T-shirt by the appeal coordinator Sally Richardson gave me a couple of t-shirts. One of them doesn't fit. I'm not going to tell you why. Maybe it's a new I've had too many pies. But so I've got these t-shirts, appeal. And if anybody's listening, if it ever gets on the radio, give money to appeals. But it's not a great, I'm not saying this is the appeal to go for, but it's a way of just taking that extra step, a little bit of publicity for the place. You know, I might get a few hundred pound or a penny. Maybe it'd be nice actually if everybody stopped drinking for one less pint a week and that to charity. That would be a massive amount of money. It's an amazing amount of money we waste on stuff that we don't really need.
What's your role at the hospital?
I'm a porter. Yeah, I'm involved in, well, moving people around. If it moves, I move it. And that's people, that's furniture, that's anything and everything. I drive. I deal with mortuary situations, you know, dead bodies. So it's a wide-ranging job. It's not a particularly enjoyable job at times. But somebody's got to do it, haven't they? You know, it's... So that's basically what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying a little bit of money for the hospital. If nothing happens, it's fair enough. I've got to try, haven't you? But I wish I'd thought ahead and done some sponsorship, but I didn't. I just got a t-shirt at the last minute.
Have you done anything like this before?
No, nothing like this. The nearest thing, I suppose, was quite a few years ago, 10, 12 years ago. I did get involved with a little bit of working on low budget films. Now that suddenly I think everybody thinks, why did you not mention that before? Because I never thought about it. There was they were making low budget historical films and they needed financing, so they'd had a giant whip round. Everybody chucked in a few hundred pounds, a couple hundred pounds help out on the film. And so we made a film about Robert the Bruce with Brian Blessed, and it was fun and I enjoyed it. People say, what did you do that for? What a waste of money. But it was cheaper than a holiday and it was a lot of fun. And it's not a great film, but it was fun making it. Went up Scotland a lot, got hit by the axes, you know, did some stunt work, moved a load of crates, enjoyed it. It was fun. Like I say, it, again, that's a grand folly. It never made any money. Not many, did get a show on Sky at 2 o'clock in the morning once, and that's about it. And I do get to appear in one scene with Brian Blessed as the man standing next to the door. I was supposed to shut the door, wouldn't it? It was rock solid, so I'd stand next to them. That's my big scene.
And what was the name of the film?
It's called The Bruce. I think I have no idea where it is. There are a couple of clips on YouTube. That's about all I know about it now. It did get on Sky about 10 years ago, 2 o'clock in the morning. That's the only time it's ever been shown anywhere, I think. I have got a video of it. I can watch it any time I want. I don't, but I can. And also made another one of Macbeth. Again, that's another thing I just popped out, forgot about, isn't it? Macbeth with Jason Connery, Sean Connery's son, which he hates being reminded of, because it's not that he dislikes his dad, it's just that he says, he's Jason Connery, his dad's Sean Connery, the two are separate, you know. It's a nice bloke, actually, one of the nicest fellows I've, he really is a nice bloke, Jason Connery. Plays pool, talks to you, remembers your name 6 months down the line, which is rare in any occasion, but for a bloke who you only met to suddenly say, hello Tony, how you doing? That's really nice. Yeah, really, really good fellow. I like him.
And just to bring it back with the plinth, have you got any hopes or fears or expectations about going up there?
Well, no, like I say, when I saw it on the webcam, you see it from above. All the photos show it from the ground. From above, it's a lot narrower than I thought it was going to be. And I'm not great on heights at the best of times. I was more nervous about going up in the chariot. But then when I saw the width of the plinth, I thought, oh no, now I know what I'm scared of. But now, other than that, I don't mind being heckled. I just ignore them if I get heckled. It's at 5 o'clock in the morning, the drunks are going home. We just see people falling down in the street. But yeah, it's fine. I'll be all right with it.
Thank you very much.
That's okay. It's what we're here for, isn't it?